Hour number two, we're going to talk some 49er football as they shut out Los Angeles 28-0. And again, we don't have a complete gauge on how good of a performance that was because we need to see more of the Rams. Are they really that bad? Are they as bad as the 49ers made them look? I mean, that was unbelievable, wasn't it? The defense of the 49ers, I thought, was outstanding, and they were aggressive. I thought Chip Kelly's team, they were disciplined. I mean, that's very impressive. It really is. And again, I know people are saying, well, we played the Rams, and I get that. But I don't care. That it's still the National Football League, and you're able to shut out a team and dominate like that. That's impressive, to say the least. So we'll talk some 49er football. We'll take your phone calls after we talk with Ted Robinson, the voice of the San Francisco 49ers. We got The Nation coming up in the 6 o'clock hour with Lincoln Kennedy. But again, I think the one thing that really impressed me is normally in week one you'll see sloppy play with penalties. The fact that Chip Kelly's squad only had two penalties, I mean, they were disciplined. They didn't make mistakes. And that's the thing that really impressed me is how they were able to play without all the penalties that we saw a lot of in week one. The outstanding voice of the San Francisco 49ers is Ted Robinson. He's nice enough to share a couple minutes with us. Ted, how are you?
Hey, Grant. Well, I would echo your thought completely there because you know what it reminded me of, honestly, was the first game when Harbaugh took over. And it was a similar thing. The 49ers had, I think they felt they were being undercoached in the Singletary era. And when Harbaugh came in right away, that's the first thing you noticed was they just played the game the right way. You know, right. Broke the huddle in order. Special teams knew where they were supposed to be. I mean, stuff we all take for granted and shocks you when it's not right. I think we saw that very vividly Monday.
And again, the jury's out on, you know, how much of it was the 49ers defense, how much was the inept Rams offense. But here's what stuck out to me. The 49ers defense was so darn physical, and they played a physical style of football without committing penalties.
Yeah, defensive line was good. And that's an area that, honestly, Grant, should be good because the 49ers have invested quite a bit if you look at the draft picks in the defensive front. So it was good. And the funny part was last year, I think the 49ers really, both games against the Rams, they got beat on both lines of scrimmage. And I was stunned they won both Monday night, especially as good as the Rams D-line is. But the 49er D-line, they have depth there, they have talent, and they should be good. So this, I think they have to hope that this game was the start of what will be a season-long trend.
Ted Robinson, the voice of the 49ers. And I tell you, Ted, we deal with this every year with teams, and you went through it last year, opening up on Monday night, playing on the other side of the country against a team that did not play, you know, on Sunday. They played Thursday. It's the same thing again this year at Carolina. I mean, you got 31 other teams. And like, you telling me the NFL, when they come up with the schedule, can't pick another team to play in Carolina? You're going to take a team that played on Monday night, have them travel across the country to take on a team that played Thursday? I don't get that. I mean, it is what it is, and I can sit here on the radio and make all the excuses I want, but that just doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, and it's 2 years in a row, Grant, not only – I mean, look, the Monday night opener could become a tradition. It's a really nice thing, and it's in large part because of the sun and the heat in the stadium. The league is helping the 49ers play fewer day games early in the season. All right, so that's part of it. Now, the problem is you don't have to go all the way to the East Coast 2 years in a row to play a really good team and then come back in week three, just like last year, and play a division road
yep.
game. And so that's the difficulty. And look, we all know the NFL schedule. It's not who you play. Everybody plays virtually the same teams. It's the sequence.
Yep.
And this sequence is really rough 2 years in a row.
Give me your thoughts on the performance and what you saw from Blaine Gabbert on Monday night, Ted.
Well, the word that Chip Kelly used was, would we echoed, clean. Although there were a couple of near picks, one that absolutely should have been picked. Look, he missed some throws in the first half. You know, so you wouldn't say it was outstanding, but he clearly threw some balls in the second half. He threw a couple of passes that were terrific, and everyone, touchdown to McDonald was a good throw, but the one to Celek was probably the best, where he just put that in the narrow slot between two defenders, and he put that right on the money. It's the accuracy, quite honestly, that Kaepernick had lacked the last couple of years. Gabbert runs with his legs. To me, now this is just me, Grant, he climbs up in the pocket, and if you notice, most of his runs were straight ahead Monday night, whereas Kaepernick's tendency when pressure came was to try to go backwards and loop outside, and everybody knew that about him. and made it very tough on him. Gabbert is willing to climb up and step up inside, which I think is a positive. Now, of course, we'll see teams react to that. But ultimately, it's his team. This is his team. The players respect him. They think they embrace, or they like the way he embraces the role of quarterback. And then the last thing, hopefully the receivers help him more. Because you saw a play in the first quarter, Grant, that I can't tell you the last time I saw a 49er receiver downfield as open as Jeremy Curley was
right on
a route right up the right hash mark in the first quarter. Now, Gabbert missed the throw. But to me, that, I hope, is a glimmer. Because
yep.
I can't tell you how rare it's been to have a 49er wide receiver that open.
Ted Robinson with us here on the Grant Napier Show. Do you have a different feeling right now compared to this week, 12 months ago, after the Niners had done what they did to Minnesota on a Monday night?
Yeah, you know, it's hard. That's a great question because it's hard. Because I got caught up, like a lot of people did last year, hoping for Jim Tomsula that it was a great thing, seeing how Carlos Hyde ran. You were hoping. And Pittsburgh was just, you know, was a really bad first half, and then things got better in the second half. The problem was week three. Week three crushed the 49ers season last year because Kaepernick threw the two pick sixes in Arizona, and honestly, he should have been pulled from that game. I believe he should have been pulled. He wasn't. The team didn't like that. You saw players react on the field, and it just caused a division that never was healed. So I'm trying my darndest to be a little more cautious this year. The but is the line play. The offensive line is better than it was at this point last year. They showed it Monday, and I believe they will keep that going.
Well, and they're going to need to keep. We're going to find out a lot about this team in the next 2 weeks. I mean, you just went over the schedule. We talked about Carolina, but then you said a divisional game again Arizona. So, listen, we think we may know about the team. We're really going to know about this team in 2 more weeks.
Yeah, no, and look, Seattle, you know, watching them Sunday, they're not the same right now. We obviously know Lynch is gone, but Wilson's getting hit. And suddenly, you know, a couple of years of getting hit, is that going to take a little bit of toll on Russell Wilson? He pulled that magic out again Sunday. But you start to think maybe there's some point where they show a little bit of vulnerability.
Ted Robinson joining us. I've got to get my one tennis question in before I let you go. And with the 49ers playing on Monday, I assume you watched the men's finals with Djokovic and Wawrinka. And I got to tell you, I thought that was phenomenal tennis, even though it went 4 sets. And I know a lot of Ted, I haven't gotten one question on the U.S. Open since I've been on the air. I mean, really not one. And I turned in Saturday for the final set of the women's finals, and I see all the empty seats there. I think when Serena got beat, I think a lot of people didn't come, and they had trouble selling their tickets. But give me your thoughts on what you saw with the men's finals on Sunday.
Yeah, I think the women's game, you and I didn't see the women's final. I was doing a college game Saturday night. So it doesn't surprise me, though. The women's game, I think, is in some significant trouble because other than Serena, there is no drawing card. There's no one that compels you to watch. If Sharapova comes back, she might have a little bit of that left. The men's side, though, the fans, I think, understand how terrific the top players are. And Wawrinka is now one of them. I mean, Wawrinka, This one, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. You think about that. Who would say that? Stan Wawrinka. He will be a first ballot tennis Hall of Famer with 3 major championships. And Roger Federer should hug him. Because Djokovic would be breathing down Roger's neck.
Right.
Wawrinka's beaten him in 3 finals now. You know that. And what Wawrinka's doing, Grant, is really the greatest example of tennis is aging. And it's a good thing. You're no longer done by 25 like Johnny Mack was finished at 25.
Yep.
You know, Jimmy hung around a long time, but Jimmy didn't do an awful lot in his 30s other than that one great last run at the Open. Federer's won one title since he won 30, since he turned 30. Wawrinka's 31 winning.
Wow.
So I think that's the magic mark of this. He's physically strong, and that's the measure of the guys that have been able to stand up to Djokovic and Rafa, by the way, and Roger. They are physically strong. And Robin Soderling, the now retired Swede, was the one player who did it. Stan is a couple of inches shorter than Soderling, but other than that, his game has a lot of similarity. And he's the same thing. He physically bashes Djokovic around for 4 hours to the point where he beats him down.
Yeah. All right, final thing on that with Wawrinka. And, you know, you used to talk about, you know, the 3 majors against Djokovic, and we, you know, looked like Novak was on pace to, you know, at the end of his career, we would be talking about him in the same breath that we talk about Federer and Sampras and others. I mean, is he now a little bit, is he a level behind those guys, in your opinion?
Well, the overall number still has to go. Djokovic is at 12 right now. We're talking about majors. Rafa's at 14, and I don't think Rafa will climb any more than one.
Right.
Rafa may have one French Open left in him if he can get his health back, but to me that's it. So the question is, can Novak play long enough to get to 17? And if you look at 30, and this is why I was talking about Wawrinka, it has been a dividing line in men's tennis forever. The only players that have crossed it are Agassi a couple of times and now Wawrinka. So Novak will have to do that if he's going to catch. And he doesn't necessarily have to get 17 to me to pass Fed in the greatest of all time thing, but he better get to 15 or 16. 12 isn't going to do it.
Ted Robinson, you're great. And by the way, phenomenal job once again at the Olympics. You really are a consummate pro to be able to do as many different events as you do and make them all sound great. So hats off to you.
3,000 dives in 2 weeks. You know how many Speedos I saw, Grant?
Hey,
a lot.
And you saw a lot of different colors in the pool, too, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that, Grant. Anytime.
All right, take care. That's Ted Robinson. Good stuff right there. If you want to talk 49er football, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Justin, you're with Grant Napier. Hi, Justin.
Hey, Grant. I just wanted to piggyback off of the 49ers conversation. In my personal opinion, watching that game, I thought it was subpar on every aspect of the game for the Rams. So, offensively, they look pathetic. But even defensively, I mean, if you look where the corners and the safeties were, and even the linebackers, how many times on third down did Gabbert get a first down by dropping back? And no one in the middle would even come up or be covering that middle area. Their placement of their defense was awful. Honestly, I was in Vegas and just watching it with everyone around. I kept hearing the references. Why are these teams playing on Monday or Sunday? They should be playing on Saturday or Friday, which is the ultimate disrespect of being a college team or a high school team. I think the Niners, they did get the win. I don't see them winning more than one more game.
They'll win more than one game. But here's the deal. All right, let's agree on this if we can. I'm with you that the Rams are not a really good indicator of where your football team is when you beat them 28-0. So let's just for sake of conversation agree on that. They play at Carolina and at Arizona. If they can be competitive in either of those games, that to me will be a good sign. I'm personally not expecting them to win either game, but let's just wait and see how we look at this 49ers team in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think they're going to get blown out by at least 20 points next week. But, you know, if Kaepernick was behind center, I think it would be worse. I mean, it's the best that they have right now. They're not deep. But the funny thing is, going to the office Monday, Niner fans were talking playoffs, and I started laughing.
No, that's stupid. That's ridiculous. And there's no team in the NFL right now that should be talking playoffs. There's no team, including New England, including Carolina, including Arizona. And no one should be talking playoffs right now.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Grant.
All right, thank you. 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Really, this, you know, as most people will tell you, the season doesn't really begin until Thanksgiving. That's when you can start talking playoffs in earnest. You're not talking playoffs after 1 week. All right? Not doing that. It's a lot easier to do that in college football after 1 week, because if you have a bad loss, you know, you are really behind the eight ball when it comes to college football. So college football, yeah, you can do that after 1 week, or at least you can talk about it after 1 week. You know, things, what do they say? You know, a loss early in the season won't hurt you like a loss at later in the season in college football. But come on now. You know, no one should be talking playoffs. No one should be talking playoffs right now, fans of the National Football League. That's absurd. It really is. All right, if you want to call the show, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Again, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. You know, speaking of the Rams and their owner, Stan Kroenke, you really understand why he wanted to leave the St. Louis market. The Rams are now the sixth wealthiest franchise in the National Football League. All right? They moved up way high on the list. All right? The Forbes magazine list, the value of franchises in the National Football League. The Rams are now worth $2.9 billion. And when the new stadium opens in 3 years, they will be moving up the ladder even more, from sixth possibly to the top of the list, or second or third. That's why they wanted to get out of St. Louis. It is a genius move by Kroenke and that family. No question about it. Think about that. $2.9 billion, according to Forbes magazine. All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Again, that's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Let's get to Dennis. Hello, Dennis. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. What's up?
Well, you know, I heard you talking football, and I just turned my radio back on because I got into my ride, and then you guys were on the station. So someone's already saying playoffs for the Niners. Is that what you were saying?
No, so you know what? We had a caller just at the end of his call say, you know, everybody was talking about playoffs after Monday, and I do this show, and I'm looking at a lot of comments. I haven't seen 49er fans saying anything about the playoffs. I think that was a caller that's misinformed.
Yeah, because that's I mean, I know that they absolutely – 28-0 is a crushing, I mean, basically, but
they played,
I mean,
the
Rams might be the most inept. I mean, are they literally a junior high team out there? Or what?
Well, they look like it. They look like it. Again, it's one game, and we know how quickly this is what I said last year, all right? You know, everyone last year at this time, everybody was talking about after the Niners beat Minnesota, you know, blah, 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 that, you know, all the critics, they didn't know what they were talking about. And the Raiders got embarrassed at home against the Cincinnati Bengals. They didn't even get the ball over the 50-yard line. And all week, that week, I took nothing but phone calls from 49er fans bagging on the Raider fans. And the Raider fans were quiet. And then, you know what? 3 weeks later, I didn't get a 49er fan to call my show the rest of the season because they were that bad. So, you know what? We need to hold on for a couple of weeks before anyone talks about playoffs.
I'm a native Seattlean, bro. I'm born and raised in Seattle, but now I live in Sacramento. And I'll tell you what, California, in my experience, is the biggest bandwagon state. It doesn't matter who it is in the state's doing good. I'm a fan. I've been a lifelong fan. As soon as they lose, you don't see them, hear them. No shirts, no screaming, yelling, no nada.
Well, if you're a fan of Seattle, you had to be disappointed with how they played up on Sunday against Miami. They looked terrible.
I was flabbergasted, absolutely horrified. I don't even like to use that word, horrified. I don't like horror shows as a general rule, bro. It was disgusting. Their offense played like, I don't know, man. Horrible.
Yeah, but the problem with them, and problem may not be the right word because there's 15 games left, but they have five different linemen starting on the offense. You know, they got five different offensive linemen this year. That's going to take time to gel.
Yeah, well, and then they were going to go with the Fetty, the rookie, and he got hurt.
Yep.
So he couldn't even start, and they had to go with the backup. So they had six technically, bro, because Fetty was supposed to start, and so they had to go with Jamarcus Webb, who couldn't even beat out tight end.
I hear
tackle.
You. I'm with you, man. Thanks for the call. I got to roll. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right, take care. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. John, you're next. Hello, John.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah.
I was going to say this Bosche at the All-Star break had 56 wins, and they have only added 21 more since then. And I'm wondering if the All-Star game itself isn't a factor in this. Because when he won the World Series a couple years ago, they made him the manager, and he picked all Giants, you know, as the alternates. And the National League only got two hits in that game. Wasn't really addressed very much by the press, but they basically seemed like they went on strike against Bosche. And then this year, Madison Bumgarner refused to pitch for them.
He didn't refuse to pitch for him. He pitched on Sunday, and by the rules of Major League Baseball, if you're a pitcher and you're an All-Star selection and you pitch on Sunday, you're ineligible to pitch in the All-Star game.
Well, they brought on Colon as his replacement. Yeah,
exactly. He was not allowed to pitch. The rules of baseball prohibit a starting pitcher on Sunday to pitch in the All-Star game, so he didn't have a choice. So next time you call, know what the hell you're talking about. All right, Chris, you're on with Grant Napier. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how you doing? Great show.
Thank you.
I want to comment on the 49ers. I see their offense and the way Chip Kelly runs this show. These guys are pretty light in the pants. They take a lot of hits. They take a lot of punishment. I don't know how long it's going to last.
You don't know how long it's going to last.
No, the health of the ball club, the offense.
But see, listen, you know, football's a violent game. There's collisions on every play. I'm not really worried about how long someone's going to last. You know, let's go. You got a game on Sunday. Get dressed. I'll see you out on the field for practice, and let's be at the airport, and let's get ready to get on that plane, and let's beat Carolina. We're not talking about, like, how many hits we took. Let's grow up here. It's the freaking National Football League. Good Lord. Gosh. You're worried now about guys breaking down already after 1 week because of the hits they took? Get in the weight room. Get strong. You're overreacting. Overreacting. It's amazing to me. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Again, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. If you're joining us late, we talked both the NFL and college with Chris Landry from LandryFootball.com. We just had Ted Robinson on. Coming up, we've got The Nation in the fourth hour of the show. I'll be on the entire hour with Lincoln Kennedy. We'll go over the big win on Sunday. We'll look ahead to the Falcons in week two. That's coming up on The Nation tonight at 6 o'clock with yours truly and Lincoln Kennedy. Let's get to Matt before we get to the break. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Grant. What's up, man? Big fan of yours.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
I'm from New Jersey originally, so I grew up. My dad's a huge Giants fan, and I found you out a few months ago on the radio, and I've seen you obviously on the Kings games, and I was lucky enough to be at a Kings game to break that decibel record a couple years ago.
Awesome.
And that was a lot of fun.
Well,
yeah.
Awesome.
Hey, so I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm a former Oiler and, of course, a Titan fan right now. So I want to talk kind of about Jeff Fisher in that game the other night with the Niners. That was one of the worst games I've ever watched in my life, number one. And number two, I want to hear from you because, you know, I had to deal with Jeff Fisher, you know, and his mediocrity for as many years. And, you know, I hear all the time, oh, he's a great coach, this, he's that. Players do love him, I get it. But, you know, the guy is an average coach at best. And, you know, he hamstrung Steve McNair for many years until he let him actually finally go and go out there and throw the ball and, you know, do this and that. He became a co-MVP with Peyton Manning. And, this thing he's doing with Jared Goff, if I was a Rams fan, it would just drive me absolutely insane.
Yeah, here in a nutshell, Matt, I'd rather lose 28-0 with Jared Goff on the field than 28-0 with Case Keenum on the field.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. And, you know, for many years, Grant, I had to deal with Eddie George, great back, but he ran Eddie George's career to the ground. He ran him 420 times a year. And he would not, and the Music City Miracle game, I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
And we got lucky in that game. We should have lost that Bills game. We should have never went to the Super Bowl that year. And, you know, I just think that Jeff Fisher is an imposter.
Well, I'll tell you, Matt, he will not be coaching the Rams that much longer in that market. And I hate to do this to you because I'm out of time and I have to go. But he will not be coaching that team long term. I can guarantee you that if they continue to slide the way they looked the other night. We'll be right back. All right, we are with you for the full 4 hours. We'll have The Nation debuting at 6 o'clock as I will be on with Lincoln Kennedy. Very much looking forward to that. I'll be on with Link, and again, that is going to be coming up at 6 o'clock. If you want to get in on the show, you can at 339-1140, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. We are happy that you're aboard. We're talking a collapse by the San Francisco Giants. They lose again to the San Diego Padres. And here's the bad news. You can't beat the Padres. You've lost to them already six times in the second half, and you got to play them four times down in San Diego after you play the Dodgers. And that's now, you got four games starting tomorrow against the Cardinals. Then you have to go to L.A. for three. They've altered their rotation to have their three best pitchers, including Kershaw and Hill. Clayton Kershaw, by the way, threw nothing but BBs through five innings at Yankee Stadium today. There were several rain delays which curtailed his ability to stay in the game. But in five innings, he was brilliant. He looked like the old Clayton Kershaw. that is certainly not good news, because his next start is going to be against the Dodgers, or against the Giants, when the Giants play L.A. Next week. So, again, I'm not waving the white flag entirely. It's close to coming out if I'm looking at the Giants, because the reality is they're still in the playoffs right now. They're still a playoff team right now. And I personally don't think they're going to stay a playoff team. I don't see this changing. But at least despite this horrible play in the second half, they're still a playoff team ahead of the Mets and ahead of the Cardinals. All right, 339-1140. That's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. I hope that, you know, you look at baseball and you say, okay, all teams are going to go through a rough stretch through 162. But this is not a rough stretch. This reminds me of the A's 2 years ago when they made the trade Cespedes for Lester. And the A's had the best record in baseball. And then once they made that trade, they were never the same team. The only difference is the Giants didn't really make any changes. I mean, at the trade deadline, yeah, they traded Matt Duffy, but he wasn't playing anyway. And they got Matt Moore, and they got Will Smith. But, I mean, this is brutal. No closer. You can't protect leads in the ninth. Not good. Definitely not good. All right, on the local front, the Kings signed Jordan Farmar today to add to the depth in the backcourt. So in the last few weeks, they added Ty Lawson and now Jordan Farmar. Training camp begins a week from Tuesday. So the Kings at least now have depth in the backcourt, and we'll see how Dave Yeager is going to go about implementing his rotation. We still are waiting word from the NBA as it relates to Darren Collison and whether or not he'll be suspended, and if so, for how many games. All right, let's get to some more phone calls. Why don't we start with Dave? Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Grant. You know, I went to both Giants games last two nights in a row, and when they hit that home run last night in the ninth, it was like a mortuary. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and we were both thinking, this may be the biggest collapse I have ever seen in my lifetime in any professional sport, having the best record at the All-Star break to having the worst record after that. And I'm with you. I just don't see I don't see how they recover from these.
I don't. I don't think you can lose three games to the Padres in the middle of a pennant race in September and bounce back from that, especially when you look at the schedule. Four against St. Louis, at L.A. for three, at San Diego for four. I mean, I just don't see how, unless the Mets falter, and I don't see that happening, that might be the only way they could hang on. But even if they make the playoffs, I don't see this team without a closer, with their bullpen being as bad as it is, I don't know how they would ever succeed in the postseason, even if they made it.
I don't either. Hey, Grant, have you ever seen a collapse like this bad?
Well, yeah, I'd have to go with the Red Sox. They had a 13.5 game lead over the Yankees in July, and the Yankees ended up sweeping Boston up in Boston. In a four-game series, it's referred to as the Boston Massacre. Chris, you remember that, don't you? The Boston Massacre in the summer of 78. And then the Yankees won a one-game playoff with Ron Guidry on the mound. And that to me, was the biggest collapse I've ever witnessed, was the Red Sox blowing a 13.5-game lead in July to the Yankees.
Well, yeah, I guess I would top this one here. But, man, this is just painful to watch.
If you're a Giants fan, it's got to be very painful, because there's, you know, like you see him sweep Arizona and you're thinking, all right, well, maybe this is the start of something good. And then you go home and you lose to a team as bad as the Padres. Come on now.
Oh, 26 blown saves the bullpen has given up this year.
It's pathetic.
26 blown saves.
It's pathetic. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
It is. And if you're Bochy, he must be living on ibuprofen and Tums.
Well, I don't, you know, Bochy's a great manager, and he's tried everything he can try in his bullpen. He's used everyone, and there's no one that's been able to step up to the challenge. So I don't know what he does. I mean, the team is the team, all right? Your roster is your roster. It's not changing. You got to find someone. I don't know what the answer is, Dave. He's tried everything. I don't think there is an answer, really. That's to me, the way I would answer that.
That chicken like they did in Bull Durham or something.
I don't know, man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. 11:40. You know, again, he asked if that's the worst meltdown I've ever seen. I'd got to go back to the 13.5 game lead that the Red Sox blew in 78. I mean, that's what you call a big time meltdown. All right, that's a big time meltdown. So, you know, I don't know. When you look at the Giants, again, first of all, they're still in the playoffs. You know, they're not out of the playoffs yet. And I say yet. So let's understand that. They still have a chance. They still have a chance to get into the playoffs. But if you're a Giants fan right now, I don't see how you are going to be able to get into the playoffs watching this type of baseball and these type of results since July. I don't see it happening. All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We get to Mark. Hello, Mark. Mark is not there, so let's get to Trevor. What's up, Trevor?
Hey, how's it going, Grant?
I'm well, Trevor.
You know, I was telling people, you know, when people were mad that Boach kept running Casilla out there, that the Giants don't have a closer on their roster, and Casilla is the closest thing to it. Now, is he great? Obviously not. But Romo doesn't get out lefties. Strickland's still prone to the home run ball. Osich walks too many guys. I mean, they didn't have a close. The only guy who could have possibly been, Law was throwing really well before he got hurt. So once Law goes down, Bochy's hands are tied. And him making a move to go to another closer is really just to appease. I mean, I think in his mind, he's just like, well, people are tired of seeing Casilla blow these days. But he knew he didn't have another option at closer. So, to me, people were saying Boach was too loyal. I don't think it had anything to do with that. He knew on this roster, Casilla is the closest thing to a closer. And, you know, so, you know, you run some other guys out there the next day and you see what happens. So, you know, honestly, I still feel like Casilla, even though he's not a good option, he's the best option for the Giants to close. Also, Grant, I wanted to know how much – I'm not sure if you talked about it yet. I've just tuned in. How much you've heard or the speculation about the Cousins to the Cavs trade. Have you heard much about?
Zero.
None. Okay.
Zero.
Okay.
All right? Not okay. Happening. All right. Thank you very much. We'll come right back. The Grant Napier Show on Sports 1140 KHDK. Chris, you remember that 13.5K meltdown, right? You weren't alive yet? Well, let me refresh your memory. All right, the Red Sox had a 13.5 game lead. The Yankees fired Billy Martin, all right? They hired Bob Lemon, and it coincided with the tabloids in New York going on strike, both the Daily News and the Post, and it freed up a lot of the tension in the locker room, and Bob Lemon and the Yankees made up 13.5. In the four games, Mickey Rivers, the Yankees leadoff man, the games were over before the Red Sox even came up to bat in the bottom of the first. Every game was a sizable lead before the Red Sox even took their turn at bat in the bottom of the first. And if you want more information, just look up Boston Massacre 1978. Since you weren't born, you'll be able to learn all about it. And then they ended up tied, and then the Yankees won the one-game playoff. I don't know if you remember that game. Oh, that's right. You weren't born. You can look that up online as well. That's the Bucky Dent home run against Mike Torres over the monster in left field, just in case you missed that one, all right? So it was there's been a lot of great comebacks in sports, but that's one of them. And then, you know, you look at some things that are going on right now. I don't have the answers if you're a Giants fan, other than they don't seem like they know how to win anymore. You know, like they don't seem capable of winning close games. They don't seem like the whole – you can sense it almost every ninth inning. Like last night, you know, I'm watching a game and I'm thinking, well, it doesn't look good, but then it is the ninth inning and the Giants bullpen stinks. And you're looking at, you know, there's a two-strike count, fastball, 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 and the ball is tagged, almost to straightaway center, a little bit right center, for a three-run homer. And I'm not a Giants fan, but I'm watching that and I'm saying, same story, different night. It is How do you lose to a team as bad as the Padres six times? Three in July, three now, and now you have four more down in San Diego. I don't know. This team is just, they just look completely, completely different than they did in the first half of the season. And I think I speak for a lot of people. I don't have the answer. I really don't. Because it's not just, you know, listen, you can say, well, they, you know, Posey's hurt. You can say, you can listen, we can make excuses all we want. They can't hit the ball out of the yard. They've got, you know, their middle of their lineup is anemic. They have a horrible bullpen. You know, when they were winning the World Series, they had one of the best bullpens in baseball. Now they have one of the worst bullpens in baseball. You can't win in baseball without a bullpen. You just can't. Why do you think the Cubs went out and got Aroldis Chapman and gave up what they had to give up? Why do you think the Cleveland Indians went out and got, you know, Andrew Miller? Why do you think the Nationals went out and got Melanson? All these teams greatly solidified their bullpen. What do the Giants do? They got Will Smith. Are you kidding me? I mean, come on now. I mean, just come on now. And again, I said this last week, and I'm going to say it again. Don't even think about the Dodgers right now. Forget about the Dodgers. If you're a Giants fan, you better be thinking right now about the St. Louis Cardinals and the New York Mets, and you better be hoping that the Mets lose and that you take three out of four this weekend against St. Louis. Forget about the Dodgers right now. Forget about them. They just scored a run in the top of the ninth to lead the Yankees. So if they hold on and win that game, the Giants will fall back to five. And I don't see this team making up five games on anybody, especially with the way Kershaw pitched today. I don't see it happening at all. So you better be thinking wild card right now, and that means you better be thinking about the Cardinals losing and the Mets losing. That, to me, is your best way to get in. All right, Mike, you're on with Grant Napier. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Grant. How's it going?
I'm right, Mike. What's up?
Good. I want to ask you two questions, okay?
Yes, sir.
In your opinion, what's the two teams that had the biggest collapse in baseball history?
Well, I'm doing this right off the top of my head. The one would have to be the Red Sox, and they're blowing a 13.5 game lead in July. That would be number one. You know, right off the top of my head, I don't know a second, but I know you've got one. So what would it be for you?
Well, mine would be the 64 Phillies and the 69 Cubs.
All right, refresh my memory on the 64 Phillies. How big of a lead was that?
Their last 16 games, if I remember correctly, my dad was a big Cardinal fan, and I think they were like 3-13 the last 16 games. So that's kind of a collapse.
No, that is a big-time collapse. That is, absolutely. And then you said the 69 Cubs, the year the Mets won the World Series, right?
That's correct.
Right,
correct.
Yep, the amazing Mets. And, yeah, that would be one. I didn't even think about the 69 Cubs. But
that was a collapse.
Yeah, that was a big collapse. Did you say that was 63 or 64 with the Phillies?
64.
And they lost 13 of 16 down the stretch, right?
I think it was 3 of 16.
Unbelievable. Wow. Yeah. Incredible.
Who's the worst trade you've ever seen in baseball history?
Oh, my gosh. There have been so many. I'd have to have a book full of bad trades in baseball.
What's off the top of your head?
I don't know. I'd have to really think about this. There have been so many bad trades in baseball. How Ruth ever ended up on the Yankees is mind-boggling to me.
Wasn't it for $100,000?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, that would probably be, you know, right there. But in terms of current, you know, modern-day baseball, boy, oh, boy. Honestly, that's a fabulous question, Mike. I'd have to give this some thought to list which trade I think is the worst I've ever seen.
All right. You want to hear one?
Yeah, sure.
Ernie Broglio and Lou Brock.
Lou Brock. All right. So you caught me off guard on that one. What year was that?
I want to say 64.
All right. So you're going back to the 60s. So the Lou Brock trade. And, of course, we all know what Lou Brock did in his career.
For Ernie Broglio.
All right. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Mike's going back. I was 5 years old back then. Chris, were you born in 64? Oh, you weren't? All right. I guess if you weren't born in 78, you probably weren't born in 64. But I don't know if, like, in your first life you were a dog or something. You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't know if, like, you were really, you know, you came back, you were a dog or a cat, and you came back, and now you're, you know, obnoxious Chris with your stinking hat on every day. I don't know. But you don't wear your Notre Dame gear anymore, though. I know that. I've seen that. No more Notre Dame gear. Oh, you only wear them on Saturdays? All right. What happens if the Republic are playing on Saturday?
None of my clothes fit anymore, so.
That's a good point. Well, so, you know, I mean, a football jersey can be big. I mean, who cares, you know? Who cares, right? I'll tell you what you could do, since your clothes don't fit anymore. You could just put shoulder pads underneath your jersey, and it would fit better. So on Saturdays, go out to your local sports shop, buy a pair of shoulder pads, put them on, and you're good to go. You know? You're good to go. Absolutely. So, Chris, I'll tell you a real funny story here. Well, you might think this is funny. So the Yankee game was at noon that day, the one-game playoff. Keith Jackson, the phenomenal broadcaster, was doing the play-by-play. And I was a sophomore in college, and we only had one TV in my fraternity house. And so I got down in front of the TV at 8 a.m. because we had my fraternity brothers that every day they would bet on Family Feud, the dating game, and they would every morning they'd be down there in front of the TV betting on these shows. All right. And so I got down there at 8 in the morning. I had my whole Yankee gear. I was ready to go. Nobody was touching that TV. There is absolutely nobody in the world that was going to come in and do anything to affect that TV. So that ended up being, you know, the Bucky Dent game. So 3 days later, I get this manila envelope in the mail from my dad, and it had all of the clippings from all the New York papers. And he had a little note saying, "Grant, I know you were at class and missed the game, so here are the clippings from the paper." All right. That's what I remember about that week. That was something else. All right. We have got 2 hours left, including The Nation with Lincoln Kennedy coming up in the final hour of the show. But don't go anywhere, because we've got a lot more. We've got a lot of football going on. We've got baseball. We've got it all happening right here on the Grant Napier Show on Sports 1140 KHTK.